Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends, this is Michael Fiend Dean.
This is Nima V, also a fiend.
Nima Fiend.
Yeah,
good, if you want. Good. So this cast, the name of this cast is Ron Paul is the only adult in a room full of children.
It's funny because it's true. See, that's a new thing though. You're naming the cast at the beginning of the show. You used to name them after they were already recorded.
Yeah, well, it gives a little more continuity, and it's also like, you know, sometimes I have an idea that's really solid, and sometimes you don't know what the picture's going to look like until you start painting it, but I think I have a pretty good image of it today. I've been incredibly focused lately, and I've been sleeping about 5 hours a night, and I have my window open because it's warm in Wyoming, and it's windy, so you probably hear the Wyoming wind in the background. Oh, right. Let's talk about Ron Paul.
Ron Paul, the only adult in a room full of frickin' kindergartners.
Now, someone argued with me on that. They said, what about Rand Paul and Gary Johnson? And I said, well,
bad analogy. Rand Paul's his son. It already works.
I know, there you go. I know. Can you imagine the father-son talks growing up in that household?
Oh, they must have been genius. I think people would pay for recordings of that.
I know.
Too bad. Well, we should ask the feds. They've probably been tapping Ron's phone for a while.
There you go. I wonder if it was ever, son, you're not a good libertarian because you didn't clean your room.
Right, right.
You entered into a voluntary contract to not leave home at 12 and go work in the salt mines, so therefore, you know, lib paradise. Lib pair,
that's what we're hoping for. So what made you decide to call the podcast that?
Well, because Ron Paul's stepping down from Congress to run for president,
right?
Which is interesting. But, you know, somebody argued with me, well, what about Gary Johnson and Rand Paul? Aren't they adults in the room full of children? And I said, well, first of all, at this point, Gary Johnson's not in the room. You know, he's not in the Congress or the Senate. He was a governor, but he's not now.
I don't even really think he's not in the debate room either. I don't think they're going to let him do the debates.
And Rand Paul, I don't think he's quite an adult, really. You know, I think by 2016, he'll be ready to run for president. But and, you know, there's an interesting article by Paul Bonneau that I'll link about he thinks it's a bad idea if Ron Paul wins this time because he thinks, you know, like we said before, like everything's going to collapse in the next 4 years and we don't want a libertarian being blamed for it. So really, it'd be better for a libertarian to pick up the pieces in 2016. And Ron will probably be too old to run for president then. A lot of people think he is now, but Rand or Gary Johnson would be right there.
Well, see, that's the thing. If Ron Paul does win, then you'll know that there's some kind of, I don't know if there's some kind of secret
conspiracy
thing planned. I don't want to say conspiracy, but if they let Ron Paul win, then they must know that it's all going to go to shit, and they want him holding the torch when it's that time.
Yeah. Did you know that Timothy Leary did a fundraiser for Ron Paul many years ago?
Tim Leary. Refresh my memory. He sounds like a celebrity.
You're a youngster.
Yeah.
I know. Everyone over 35 listening is going, Nima doesn't know who Timothy Leary is?
He's that big, huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
Timothy Leary was a Harvard professor in the 60s and took LSD and went on a religious mission of turning the world onto LSD. He said it would make everything better.
Ah, huh.
And he wrote a lot of books about it. He lectured about it. He got arrested for possession of pot because they set him up because they wanted to take him down. He was a huge youth culture icon in the 60s. You know, he's not the kind of guy that would back a Republican, but he backed Ron Paul in 88 or whenever when he ran for president.
Right, right. Well, okay, so I mean, I imagine even back then people knew that the Democrats were never going to make any – we're never going to back up on the drug war, right? I mean, or did people used to think that?
I don't know. stupid people. But, you know, I mean, I think there were Democrats going after people like Timothy Leary, too, back then. It was mostly Republicans, but I'm sure that, you know, well, I think the governor of California messed with him, too, which was, I forget, they're all the same person with a different mask on, but.
Who, the minions of the state?
Yeah. When I was about 15, Timothy Leary was speaking at a college about 25 miles from me, and some of my older friends were going. You know, when I was 15, all my friends were like 25. My friends were always older than me until a certain point in my life where it passed, and now they're usually younger than me. It was about 35, I think. But, yeah, and my dad wouldn't let me go, and I threw a big fit about it. It really upset me. He knew who Timothy Leary was. Every parent did in the country. He's the guy that said, tune in, turn on, drop out. You ever heard that phrase?
Yeah, I think I have. Yeah,
that's him.
Okay. Fair enough. So, Ron Paul is going to not seek re-election to Congress. There's been a lot of reaction to this. What's your initial reaction?
Well, I think it's a good thing because I think he can do more running for president even if he doesn't win. Maybe he'll win, but even if he doesn't, you know, I really think that the Liberty Movement is taking on in a big way in this country, and I think that Ron Paul is a large part of the reason. And just because he doesn't win president when he runs doesn't mean he's not influencing everybody else.
But will he have the same national pulpit? I mean, the thing about it is Ron has been preaching to more than the choir for a while now, and that's partly because he's the congressman, and when producers and people in newsrooms are looking for somebody to on the Republican side to criticize Republicans for being too statist in ways and on Democrat shows for things like that, they go to him, and he gets to be on shows that he wouldn't normally get to be on if he weren't in Congress, the kind of shows that want to interview congressmen.
At this point, it's not because he's a congressman, it's because he's Ron Paul. And I think that
he would still be Ron Paul.
He'll have even more free time. I mean, he's been doing this for a long time. I'm going to link he was a congressman for several terms and then stopped and ran for president as a libertarian and then went back to being a congressman for several terms.
Right.
I mean, I have a great video from 1988 that I will post of Ron Paul on this trash TV. One of the first, like, Jerry Springer type people throw chairs and yell at each other shows. It was called the Morton Downey Jr. Show.
Did somebody throw a chair at Ron Paul?
No, but they were fucking screaming at him. It was when he was running for president, I think, under the Libertarian Party, and he looks really young in it, and he's screaming at people. I wish he'd still do this, but it's probably better that he doesn't.
Really? So he wasn't as laid back Ron as he is now, huh?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, he was, do you know who the Guardian Angels are?
The biker gang?
No, it's not a biker gang. It was a street patrol group in New York City. They wore red hats. It was kind of paramilitary, like, you know, we're going to take back our streets. They had walkie-talkies, and they would do citizens' arrests and hold people till cops got there.
So, like, neighborhood watch on steroids kind of thing?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, in a libertarian paradise, there'd probably be something like that for violent crimes, but they also arrested people for smoking a joint and stuff.
Ah.
But it's a debate between, like, a couple pro-legalization people on the stage, Ron Paul's one of them, and a woman in the audience who's doing most of the yelling, who's a guardian angel, who's just like screaming at him and saying, you people want to legalize marijuana? It's crazy. You want to legalize drugs? You should live in the hood where I live. People get killed because there's drug dealers there. And Ron Paul's like, yeah, but if it were legal, people wouldn't get killed over it. And she's like, you're immoral. You're horrible. You want children to get killed. And Morton Downey Jr. is just, he's screaming at Ron Paul too. And it's, he died a painful death of cancer, and I'll never be happy for anybody dying of cancer. But it's like Mark Twain said, you know, I've never wished a man dead, but I have read some obituaries with pleasure. And that's my feeling about Morton Downey Jr.
Oh, wow. That's nice and poetic. Love it. On the Ron Paul news, I did see one bit of reaction that I did find kind of interesting. And Tom Woods was on, I guess there's this thing called the Reality Report with this guy who sort of does a freedom-based kind of web news, Gary Franchi. And he brought up the point that Ron Paul will be able to switch parties from Republican and keep running, whereas in 2008 he couldn't because he can't run on a libertarian platform and still be a Republican congressman. So he wouldn't have that problem this time. Tom Woods is on there being interviewed, and Tom Woods says, yeah, that's possible, but I don't think that's at all Ron's goal in the retirement. But I thought it was an interesting thing to point out that if Ron wanted to, if he doesn't get the Republican nomination, but he was really strong, like maybe he just barely misses it, or maybe he's just still got a lot of popular support. I mean, even right now, he seems to be one of the people that can actually beat Obama in a head-to-head election. So if he wanted to run as a libertarian or even just as...
He should run as a Democrat, man.
I don't think he could do that. Well,
I think he could. You know, in the Free State Project in New Hampshire has like 15 people in the state House and Senate there, and one or two of them ran as a Democrat, even though they're nothing like Democrats.
Right, right.
And they did it for political purposes because it's a district that usually they vote Democrat no matter what.
Well, there's a lot of good people out there who for some reason call themselves Democrats and have identified with the Democrats that I think are upset with Obama and that would rather vote for Ron Paul than have another vote for Obama.
Naomi Wolf is one of them. Naomi Wolf is a far liberal left activist who 3 years ago was saying, George Bush is horrible. He's suspending human rights. He's a Nazi and he's a fascist.
Well, he was, and she was right when she was saying that.
And, you know, and when Obama got elected, she was like, he's going to change everything. And now she's changed her tune on it.
Well, there's a genius interview with her and Lou Rockwell. Try to look it up in the Lou Rockwell podcast archives. It's about an hour long, which is way longer than any Lou Rockwell show podcast goes. And it's just, she wrote a book basically about how America was descending into tyranny. Of course, it was a lot of Bush policies because Bush had been president for 8 years at the time.
It's called The End of America, right?
Yeah, I think so. She's basically almost starts to interview Lou about what the concept of anarchy is. And Lou just schools her, and she totally seems to get it. She's like, huh, that makes a lot of sense. Lou basically drops the point that at the heart of it is that immoral actions are always immoral, no matter if you're in a government uniform or not, you know, which we talk about all the time. You can't call it taxing and have it be different from stealing on a moral sense.
Did she get that or not?
Yeah, she totally got it. She didn't fight
really
back. Yeah, she thought it made complete sense.
I would expect her to get the Obama is stepping on rights, but I wouldn't expect her to get taxation is theft. I'm glad she did. I wish more liberals and Obama humpers would even realize the first part that, you know, he's turning into George Bush too. Even people who still think taxes are good shouldn't love Obama. Yeah. I mean,
I think people who've actually been paying attention get this, or people who've still been affected by the screwed economy. I mean, there's been a lot of talk, you know, in the African-American community about how, you know, this is almost the worst they've had it in a while. Their unemployment is really high. They can't find jobs. A lot of them are getting cut from, you know, state and local governments because they're overrepresented in those kind of agencies. And so the first black president, not only is he bombing Africa, he's also screwing the whole African-American community. And I think people are realizing that.
Yeah, we have some Africa talk to talk about.
Africa.
Talk
oh, about yeah, this Africa. Is great news. Go ahead and tell them what's going on.
I have a new project. There's this organization in Ghana, Africa, called Africa Youth Peace Call. And don't mind the name. You know, it sounds like a UN organization or something, but it's not. It's a... It's a libertarian education organization in Africa, in Ghana. And it's run by this really cool cat I've been chatting with a lot named Kofi, K-O-F-I. And he's the man. And it's totally legit. I've run this organization by a bunch of American libertarian organizations, and including some that have actually sent someone there to work with him. So this is not a...
Right. He didn't say you were a lottery winner and that you had to...
It's not a Nigerian money scam, even though Ghana does border Nigeria. But people from the International Society for Individual Liberty, people from Peace, Freedom, and Prosperity Movement, the Foundation for Economic and Education, and the International Policy Network have all co-signed that this is a good organization. By the way, he wants you to do a video Skype presentation in about 2 weeks for an event he's doing. Are you willing to do it?
Nice. 2 weeks. Do you know the date?
I don't know the date yet. It's sometime between like the 30th of July, and you know, the next, it's all the next week.
Okay, great. I think I'll actually be in Houston, but I'm taking all of my recording equipment with me. I think me and my little bro are going to work on some songs, and what a place to do it.
You'll have that whole week off, so you can do it anytime.
I can do it anytime. I can do it, you know, because of the time difference between here and Africa, any time of day. I mean, I'll be chilling with my family, but you know,
it's only 6 hours later. It's 6 hours later.
Okay. Okay.
Your Houston's the same time zone as Casper, right?
No.
Is it 1 hour?
Houston's central time, Casper's mountain time.
Okay, so it's 1 hour later. So you're only 5 hours behind Ghana.
Okay, okay. Good
deal. So you should be able to, yeah, I will hook it up. He wants us to each do two-hour things with a Q&A, you know, give a rap and then talk.
He wants us to each do 2 hours?
4 hours, two-hour things or 4 1-hour things. Can't do that much, that's cool, but you know,
not in a row. They can be the
okay. It'll be like 2 days, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
it,
you know,
it.
Do an hour each or something. He also wants to do Pete Voluntarist is that ER, what's his, how do you say his last name? You know, Pete, the guy that, but he's like, I'll do it if I'm not in jail, because he has a court thing coming up for filming cops in Massachusetts.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He got popped, huh?
Yep. And George Donnelly's gonna do it too.
Oh, nice, nice. He's the guy you did the Agora Fest with, right?
Yep.
Okay.
So I've been really helping Coffee out and helping out Africa Youth Peace Call. There's a link on the site if anyone wants to help them out with donations, you know, even $5 or whatever. I sent them $50, but this is a country where the average income is $1,200. So, you know, $5 goes a long way.
I almost feel like I have more to learn from him and Ghana than giving out 2 hours of my, I mean, but I guess that's the trade.
You know, I know.
I'm really curious on what I can learn during the question and answer session. I want to be asking them questions.
I know.
What's it like living in Ghana?
Well, I've talked to him and I've done some research. For one thing, citizens can own guns there, but they have to pay a government licensing fee of $32,000 a year.
Right, I did see
and
that.
And a yearly renewal of $14,000, and then they can only have a shotgun. So, you know, if you want to pay 30 years wages,
wow,
and then 10 years wages per year, you can have a gun.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're gun friendly.
That is insane.
And it's a lot of Africa and a lot of third world places in a lot of ways have way more restriction, but way less in a way. You know, like street vendor things are weird. I mean, like people get beat up and taxed and fined by the government and by like gangs. And
their governments are a lot less adept at manipulating the media into everybody loving them. It's a lot more naked aggression from the state in places where you get beat up or thrown off a sidewalk because you don't have a permit to sell apples or whatnot.
Yeah. And Ghana is one of the least tyrannical places in Africa, and it's actually got the fastest growing economy in the world, but that's, you know, they've got a long way to go. They've got a lot of room, so that may not mean that much.
Right, right.
You know, if people are living on $1,200 a year or less.
Right.
But, you know, there's a line in that movie, that gun-running movie, Lord of War. He says something like, all these nations in Africa have these noble names, the Democratic Republic of, the People's Republic of, but they really should just call themselves a more tyrannical bunch of killers than the previous tyrannical bunch of killers that run the country.
Yeah,
and but Ghana is not as eviscerated as like Nigeria or Darfur or, you know, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's
right, but they're not as free as parts of Somalia, though, where there's really no effective government.
Yeah, but they're also not starving to death in mass the way people do in Somalia. Like, I'm looking at the pictures of the people on here; they're all really skinny, but none of them are really, really, really skinny.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So they can use help, and I'm helping them out. There's a place, a link where you can send them a donation if you want. They also need equipment, and if you want to write them, I'm sending them my old one-chip mini DV camera, and I got a friend to donate a still camera. Somebody else donated the laptop they're using. But I'm doing some website revamping for him, and I've given him some business advice. You know, I sent him $50, and then I'm shipping him a box of, like, you know, a camera and a bunch of cables and some software and some books. I'm sending him that that premiere book that you and I bought to make our movie. I've pretty much internalized all of it, so I'm going to pass it on to him.
Is he pretty proficient in English? In Ghana,
they
speak a lot of English, don't they?
I believe it's his first language.
Okay.
He actually types more coherently than a lot of Americans that I type with.
I can believe that.
There are a bunch of African dialects that, you know, there's like 10 or 15 languages.
But English is like the lingua franca, kind of like in India.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Nima.
What's up?
Moving from Africa back to Wyoming, did you know that in Wyoming it's illegal to be intoxicated in your house?
You know, I saw that on your list of notes to me, is the first thing. What are you talking about?
It's a Casper thing, actually.
Ah, huh.
Police have arrested people for this, and this is another never call the police. It's like people had arguments with their spouse or whatever, and they call the police, or they call the police on the neighbors for a loud party.
Yeah.
And the police show up, and the guy who called is drunk. They've arrested the guy who called for being drunk in his house.
What do they call it? What do they charge him with? Disorderly conduct or something?
Public intoxication prohibited, section 5.08.450. Every person within the limits of the city who is found drunk or in state of intoxication within the city, or who is found to be drunk or a state of intoxication on the streets, alleys, or other public places within the city, or who is found intruding on any private premises without the consent of the owner thereof, or in that condition, annoying and frightening passersby on the streets or sidewalks, or sleeping in that condition in any public place within the city, is guilty of a misdemeanor.
Wait, annoying? You can, just being drunk and being annoying, you can get arrested?
Yes, and it's the first part within the city limits, and that includes in your home.
Yeah, yeah. They really do have the monopoly of violence there. They make no yep. bones about it. The man's home is not his castle, although they do have castle doctrine, so that's kind of interesting. Yeah. Speaking of castle doctrine, did you read about that guy in Oklahoma was recently sentenced? I think it was life in prison. You know, when I heard the news blurb, they just mentioned that he had shot some intruders when they were intruding in his pharmacy. Some teens went in to rob him. He shot them, presumably in self-defense. But he was charged with murder and then sentenced. So I'm thinking, oh, wow, horrible affront to liberty. But apparently, after he shot the teen, apparently shot him in the head, he went and shot him on the ground 5 times afterwards.
Yeah, you can't do the coup de grace.
Yeah, and when my wife mentioned the story to me, that's what I immediately thought when she mentioned that part. I was like, yeah, no coup de grace.
That's why, do you remember the Bernard Goetz case? Is that before your time?
It's before my time.
It was a really famous case in New York City. I think it was in the 70s, maybe the 80s. But it was during a time in New York City when crime was just out of control. And this guy kind of became a vigilante hero. Basically, he was on the subway. 4 black youths went up to him and aggressively panhandled him. And he's like, leave me alone. And one of them pulled out a screwdriver and waved it at him. And he pulled out his illegally possessed snub-nosed revolver.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it was a snub-nose. Actually, I think he had a bunch of shots because he shot like 3 or 4 of them. And then one of them was on the ground. And this is his fatal mistake, was he said, you don't look so bad, and shot him again.
Yeah. Well, someone in the comments on this pharmacy intrusion, you know, people were bandying around, you know, was it self-defense, was it murder? And somebody said it was both. It was self-defense when he shot the guy when they were attacking him, but it was murder when he went up to the injured person and shot them 5 more times.
And that's the same scenario in that Wyoming thing that the guy's in jail right now for, was he shot someone in self-defense 3 times, and then about 10 seconds later, when the guy was down and not coming after him, shot him again.
Right. And that also made me think of in last week's cast when we mentioned, you know, what do? You call 911 and an ambulance. Yeah. That's what you just kind of have to do it. Because, again, the goal is to stop somebody, not to kill them. You don't want to act like the government. You don't want to act like the state, like the Tucson SWAT team did when they shot a guy tons of times, left him there in a pool of his own blood, and wouldn't let the paramedics in. Eventually sent in a robot to confirm he was.
Yeah, and there's no charges. And, you know, speaking of different treatment for the government, this week charges were dropped against a Wyoming parole board member who was in a fight with his girlfriend and shot at her and missed and was charged with attempted murder, and then it was dropped.
Right, right. Well, I did read the article, and given it was written by the Casper Star Tribune, but
the Commie Star, the Red Star Tribune.
But, you know, their argument was he just shot the gun, he didn't shoot it at her. That seems kind of a silly argument when I say it now, but
what, is that just like, you know, yelling didn't work, so you let the gun yell? You don't shoot a gun in a house in an argument to make a point.
No, you don't. But
That's attempted murder.
The charges were attempted murder. Okay, so if I shot a gun in the air, pointing it at the air in an argument, yeah, that would be a horrible thing. There should be some other charges.
Well, if you shoot a gun in the air outside, you can be charged with murder. That's happened if it hits somebody.
Right, right. Well, if, yeah, if the bullet were to fall down and even hit a cow, I guess it could be cow slaughter.
Cow slaughter.
Because that's what it would hit in Thermopolis if he shot into the air.
So the federal government has ruled that marijuana has no accepted medical purpose, yet the United States government owns the patent on cannabis cures. Right. Now, doesn't that invalidate their patent?
No, because that's subject to change. They can hold that patent, you know, for as long as the patent lasts. I think this highlights how tyrannical IP laws can be. I mean, they can literally prevent – they own the patent. They own the rights to use the THC oil.
And it's not even a case like, you know, Monsanto, where they actually did some tinkering with the DNA and improved something and own the patent on the change. They just own the patent on using pot for medicine, like as it exists in the ground.
Right. Which they already, I mean, the government already claims the right to own your body and keep you from using that marijuana in the first place by making it illegal.
All gun grabbers are really pro-gun. They want the government to use its guns to enforce anti-gun laws and other nanny laws.
That's a great point. I think we bring up something similar to that in our movie as well. I mean, you want the government guns to do your bidding. The only difference is you're too pussy to pick up the gun yourself and force somebody. Not that forcing somebody by any means is good, but if you want somebody forced, don't be such a square, or I guess you...
That is so square.
Yeah, that is square.
You know, that is most nanny people, even if they don't realize it. Like, people need to realize that laws are enforced by guns or the threat of guns. And right. Most nanny people want the government to use the guns to enforce their beliefs. There are exceptions. There are people who are so pie in the sky, hippie with unicorn farts in their lungs that they actually think everyone should be disarmed, including the government. You know, like, there are people who believe nobody should have guns, not even cops in the army. Whereas you and I believe that everyone should have guns except the cops in the army. Well, not everyone. You know, somebody, there was a shooting. A guy killed his family in Wyoming this week, which,
oh,
like,
no, really?
Yeah, last week, which has been getting national press. You know, they never mention Wyoming nationally. I never hear the word on the news unless it's something like that. And
where at,
to be fair,
Wyoming?
Where was that shooting, DJ? Wheatland.
Wheatland. Okay.
You know, it's four people killed in Wheatland. Wow. And one injured. My first remark was there are four people in Wheatland, but it's actually got about 1,000 people. But it was in a trailer park, and it was a guy killed his three kids, his brother, and then shot his wife and didn't kill her. But he's going away for many lifetimes, right. Which I think he should. But, you know, what do you do about that guy? I mean, what's the minarchist answer for that? And to be fair, you know, that will almost double the murder rate for Wyoming for the year.
Yeah.
I mean, last year we had 12 murders in the state.
Yeah.
So it's not like this happens every day.
Well,
but
I don't know what the minarchist answer is, but I
what's the anarchist answer?
I know
that
the anarchist,
the kids should have a gun too?
Well, stuff like that's going to happen. I mean, anarchists and people who you know, follow these kind of things, we're not utopians. We don't think that the world's going to magically be better. We don't think that people are going to magically be better.
So your answer is if you want to make an anarchist omelet, you have to break a few eggs.
My answer is that, and I think we've discussed this before, you know, there's a certain percentage of the population that always has, you know, the potential to do something like that. There's people that are sociopaths. There's people that, if pushed the certain way, would actually murder their family or do something horrible. You can't account for everything. I mean, that's like trying to account for people getting hit by lightning. I mean, people are still going to get hit by lightning if there's no government. These things are just natural. It's part of the natural I mean, it's very unnatural in a sense of humanity.
People will, you know, people will kill their families other ways if they don't have guns. Like, you know, people in trailer parks will kill their family with baseball bats, and people in the suburbs will kill their families with golf clubs.
Yeah. Well, out on the Indian reservation there in Wyoming on the res, people just beat each other to death sometimes. You don't need any weapon.
Do Indians call people they like cousin or uncle?
I mean, I guess some of them do. I mean, I don't.
I've heard they do.
To speak for all Indians.
The interesting thing with talking with this guy in Ghana, Africa, is he calls everyone that he likes uncle. Like, he always says, "Thank you, Uncle Michael." And I told him that my dad is involved with Rotary International and that they've done work in Africa. And I'd talk to him about his organization, and he's like, "I hope Grandpa Jack can help." You know. And I was like, wow.
I think that's a sign of really good friendship, maybe. I mean,
it is. Yeah. Well, I looked it up, and it's a sign of that everyone is connected.
Okay.
And
okay.
They do it in Asia, too. I was watching this doc. I've never encountered it before last week. And then yesterday, I was watching this documentary about It's a documentary I want to recommend. It's on POV, the PBS Independent Film Channel, and it's about Khmer Rouge.
Okay.
Is that how you say it?
Khmer Rouge.
Khmer Rouge, yeah, the ethnic cleansing in Cambodia in the 70s. There were some really evil people in this documentary, but the good people in it who liked the filmmaker kept referring to the filmmaker as uncle.
Uncle. Huh. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's an East Asian and African thing.
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of cultures and slangs where you call people by family member names. I mean, brother, mama, mamacita, all sorts of things, you know? It happens.
I like to call women mama. I call my wife mama. Hey, mama. Yeah. And Middle Eastern people always say cousin. Like, whenever I was in San Francisco and I'd go into the Middle Eastern corner store on my block, they'd always say, hello, cousin, or hello, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know my Middle Eastern cousins always call me cousin, but maybe that's just because I'm their
cousin. Because you're their cousin, man.
But they make it a point. I'm Nima sometimes, but mostly, you know, when I visit my family in Houston, which I am going to do soon, so I'm very excited about that. My second cousin, Mohsen, he always calls me cousin. He calls everybody cousin. And I dig it. I like being called cousin or cousin.
Cool. So this documentary, Enemies of the People, it's about Khmer Rouge. It is devastating. It's mostly just people talking, and it's the scariest fucking thing I've ever seen. It's like this guy who's probably your age is making the documentary. He's in it a lot. He's Cambodian, and he's going around the countryside in Cambodia and talking to his people. They're not even that old. They're like 50. Who, when they were 20, were killing people for this ethnic cleansing. And it was a total thing of, like, insulated layers of orders through orders through orders of, I'm just following orders. And, you know, they were all, like, they would be killed if they didn't do this, a lot of them. And it was, like, anybody that wasn't pure ethnic Cambodian, they were lining them up. You know, even people that are, like, Cambodian with a little bit of Vietnamese or something, they were just throwing babies in the air and bayoneting them and just slitting people's throat. This one guy who had killed thousands of people by slitting their throat. And keep in mind, these people were disarmed of guns before this happened.
Right.
We talk about that in our movie. You know, Pol Pot took away the guns from the people so they couldn't fight back. But this guy, he's probably about 50 or 55, and the filmmaker became friends with him, and he's like, take this plastic fake knife and show me how you slit throats. And the guy's like, I don't want to kill you, even pretend, because I like you, uncle. And he's like, no, I want you to show me. And the guy was really shy and really embarrassed, but he did it. He had the filmmaker lie down on his belly, and then he put his hands over the filmmaker's, like, put his fingers in his eye sockets and pulled his head back, and then just slit his throat. Like, he showed that's how he showed with a plastic knife, that's how he did it. And then he said, and usually by the afternoon, my hands would be so tired from doing it that way that I would just stab them in the throat instead of slit their throat.
Wow.
I had to change my technique, you know.
Were these people tied up? They didn't fight back? Did he have to, like, get in a fist fight with every one of these?
They didn't say, but I think it was more a thing of, like, there were a bunch of people with guns standing around. And there's a painting on the Khmer Rouge, or the Pol Pot article on Wikipedia. There's a painting of a guy with a FAL rifle with a bayonet on it, and there's another guy throwing a baby up in the air, and this guy is stabbing it with the bayonet while it's in the air.
Jeez. Wow. What's the name of that movie?
It's called Enemies of the People. And the United Nations is doing tribunals and prosecuting the leaders in this, but they're not prosecuting, like, the people at the bottom that carried out of a lot of it.
Mm. I'm just speechless on that one, Michael.
Well, let's move on to something happy. Another excellent movie review. It's a movie about the Pixies. You like the Pixies, right?
I do dig the Pixies. I remember watching Fight Club. I watched the end of Fight Club before I ever watched the rest of it because it just happened to be on HBO. And I was just amazed when the buildings start blowing up and that Pixies song, Where's My Mind, starts playing.
I know.
One of my favorite moments in life so far. I've had a pretty decent life, so.
And the guy's like has a self-inflicted gunshot wound in his jaw, and then his last line is, "You met me at a very strange time in my life."
Yeah, and just the opening bars start playing, and I'm just like, "Oh yeah."
The movie is called Loud, Quiet, Loud, which is their formula for music.
Right.
The chorus is quieter. It's the opposite of the way most songs are, and Nirvana actually picked up on that formula. Kurt Cobain in one interview said, my only goal was to be as big as the Pixies. And they're an excellent band. And Kim Deal is foxy, sexy, and plump. I love her. she's everybody's in love with her. She's great. And they're really anonymous as a band. Like, this was about their reunion in 2004, and they did a really successful reunion. And there's one scene where they're in London, and there's people lined up like 6 hours before the show to get in. And the filmmaker and Kim Deal, the bass player, go out and interview people and like about the show and the band. And nobody realizes she's in the band, like one person out of 20.
Huh. Yeah, but they're really awesome. They're the Pixies. I probably couldn't pick them out of a lineup either.
I could. You know, the guitar player is Joey Santiago. There's a funny thing in there where the drummer is like doing a lot of Valium and he's always listening to his iPod and retreating from the band. And this is shortly after iPods came out, and Joey Santiago, the guitar player, is like, yeah, he's always ignoring us and listening to his Walkman. And that kind of went back to me of like, no, it's not a Walkman, it's an iPod. And it's like that thing of they carry over for a while the terminology, yeah, new technology, yeah. Old technology.
I remember Walkmans. I'm youngish, but I used to have a Walkman. I remember listening to Michael Jackson tapes on it in the grocery store in Pasadena, Texas back in the day.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
That stood out to me more than Walkman.
That was my first tape I ever bought was Michael Jackson. It's what made me start loving music, man.
So we got a couple headlines I'm just going to read here. 12 and 13-year-old kids turn in dad for marijuana possession in Utah.
The junior spies. And Utah, of course it happens in Utah. Yeah. What was it in? Where was it at in Utah? Was it in Draper or Sandy or one of the little?
I don't know. I'll link it. It's probably got something to do with police coming to the schools and telling them to do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, well, what do you think DARE is?
Yeah. And Atlanta has a scandal right now with their schools where at a high level in the school administration, they were telling teachers to let people cheat so they wouldn't lose their funding under No Child Left Behind. Thank you, George Bush.
Yeah, they got to get that cash. That's what happens when you rig the system like that. When your bread comes from the feds, you're going to cheat, lie, and steal to get that. You know, when your bread comes from your customers, you know, if it were a free market system, there would be none of that. Parents don't want to pay for their kids.
Well, there'd still be cheating, but people go out of business for doing it.
Exactly. And then people would realize that that's not good business and they wouldn't do it.
You don't go to the neighborhood meat seller who puts his thumb on the scale. Everyone figures out he puts the thumb on his scale and then the scale and they go on the street.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a place sells bad meat more than twice and people aren't going to go there.
I know. So officials from Riverside and 12 other counties in Southern California want to secede from the state. I want them to secede from the country. It'd be great. The thing is, they can't, under the Constitution, which Californians don't care about, but under the Constitution, they can't secede. No section of a state can become its own state.
That's in the Constitution?
Yes, it says, new states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state.
Okay, that's not an amendment, that's in the original,
No, it's in Article 4 of the original Constitution.
Well, see, there you go. The Constitution was already tyrannical in a lot of points, but I think that's another example of it. I mean, wrap your head around that. I mean, that's totally anti-Declaration of Independence, which says, you know, if any group of people wants to secede from their government because of a long string of abuses, or they should have the right to do that. That's what we did.
Yeah. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I mean, that happens with any system when it becomes rotten and people break away from it and rebel. And then soon the rebellion becomes the mainstream and it becomes tainted. It happened with punk rock, too. Punk rock was the answer to, like, overblown progressive rock with lots of classical noodling in it. And then punk rock became stale and statist.
Yeah, yeah. And mainstream.
Mainstream isn't bad. If the original Declaration became the mainstream, America would be a great place. But, you know,
yeah,
then they... So I want people to nominate Nima to be a guest on Adam and the Man, and I'm going to link that on the site.
Hell yeah.
Two people already have.
Oh, they have? Oh, wow.
Yeah. One of them's me, but someone else did too. It said, Nima from Freedom Fiends Podcast.
Rock on. Hell yeah. I love Adam Kokesh, and I love that show, and I want to have my own show on Russia TV. Hell. That's better than working for a affiliate. And
I'm going to beep out the name of the major network you work for. I don't want to get you in trouble, but let's take a break and then let's come back and talk about unethical human experimentation in the United States.
Let's do it. I got to go get a scotch.
So when I was a kid, my mother bought this store about 10 miles from where we grew up in a place called Chautauqua, New York, which was a gated community The store was called the Oriental Bazaar, and it was owned by the first Middle Eastern person I met, whose last name was Halaby, and he was Jordanian.
Okay.
And my mother bought it and turned it into Oriental Bazaar by Virginia and ran it for 20-some years until she sold it and retired.
Nice. What'd she sell at the Oriental Bazaar?
Everything made in, you know, what was then called the Orient, which was...
Right. Which is the East.
Which basically is everything from the Middle East to Asia. She sold everything from, like, 10-cent rubber alligators made in Korea to, like, $20,000 Persian rugs. Yeah. And everything in between. It was a giant store. It was great. Chautauqua has been around for 140 years now or something, and it's an interesting place. It started as a place to teach Sunday school teachers, and originally it was just tents. They didn't have buildings, and it was kind of a revival. And then they turned it into a touring thing with revival, and then had some like music and added some cultural things in it. And so the term Chautauqua is actually, it's the name of the lake, Chautauqua Lake, and it's Native American for bag tight in the middle because the lake shaped like a figure eight. But Chautauqua Institution is the name of this place, and it's 1 square mile. It's got a fence around three sides of it, the lake on the other side of it, and it costs money to get in the summer. You have to have a gate pass.
Wait, to get into the town?
Yeah. And the winter population is 300, and the summer population is about 15,000.
Mm, okay. So people vacation, summering there, yeah. I guess they call it in New York?
Yeah, and it's a dry town, can't have alcohol there. Although there's a phrase called Chautauqua tea, which is the sweet little old ladies who wanted to drink would sit on their porch with their crystal tea set, you know, or their tea set, and drink brandy in teacups to get away with it. You know, people always get around the laws.
Always, yeah.
But it's very expensive to live there in the summer. It was really weird because it brought me in touch with a lot of interesting things I wouldn't have known otherwise. Like, for one thing, I got really good at becoming friends with people immediately because people are only there for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And I also, like, learned to...
You had to make friends fast.
Yeah, I learned to talk to chicks and get them to love me and let them do things to them there, too. Because it was like, I'd hang out at the ballet school there and rub the girls' feet and then go from there.
Smart move. That's pimp.
You know, well, it was kind of organic. It wasn't even schemey or scammy. It was just the way it worked.
You just wanted to be around the chicks in tight clothes dancing. Yeah.
And it's a cultural institution. Like, there's a lot of religious things there. There's a lecture hall or a bunch of lecture halls. There's second violins in their summer orchestra are the first violins from other famous orchestras. It was a very white place when I was a kid, too. It was, like, really expensive and, like, only white. You know, they didn't ban non-whites, but it was mostly whites.
Right.
And I recently did some checking out about the place, and a lot of the buildings there have names on them of billionaire industrialist donors like Kellogg from Kellogg's Foods.
Okay.
And it turns out that like a lot of those people that paid for Chautauqua when it started were into eugenics. The idea of, and Kellogg was one of them. And it kind of like seems really weird to me now. Like, okay, that kind of makes sense. Like this place where you can't drink and it's kind of nanny and it's really white and it's really cultural and hoity-toity and religious. And the speed limit there is 15 miles an hour. You can't drive a car fast and you can't make noise. And it's very pastoral and tree-lined. And there's more walking streets than there are driving streets. Like a lot of the streets have a big pole at each end of the block so you can't drive a car on them.
Wow. Eugenics is one of the creepiest things in the world, but that's kind of weird to me because, you know, if you're into eugenics, you want people to be whatever, the best, the strongest. You do it by central planning and by killing the weak.
There's different forms of it. It's not always killing the weak.
It's also, you know, neutering the weak.
Or you know, with some in some countries, eugenics was very popular around 1900 till about 1939 when the Nazis picked it up from Americans and started killing people to do it. You know, right. There's other kinds of eugenics where it's like economic eugenics, where like, you know, they'll give white people, I mean, really, like I would consider the, you know, it's not just white people. I would consider the Khmer Rouge thing in Cambodia eugenics. It's like kill all the non-pure Cambodians.
Well, yeah, eugenics at its heart is a form of genocide.
But sometimes it's just encouraging the ones you want to breed and not killing the ones you don't want to breed.
either way, it's central planning of human.
It's basically offspring. Taking what they do with livestock and applying it to humans. And an interesting thing I learned is that the lady who started Planned Parenthood was an advocate of it, and she started Planned Parenthood
really
to get black people to get sterilized voluntarily.
Wow. I did not know that.
You know, there was a woman in Oakland. I don't know if I've talked about her on here before, but when I lived in San Francisco, there was a white woman married to a black man who had two mixed race kids who was collecting money from people who volunteered to give donations, and then she was paying crackheads to get fixed. And she got like run out of town with pitchforks, but
there's nothing wrong with that, though.
She's like, I'm not racist.
That's a voluntary transaction. You know,
yeah, and I thought that even then.
You thought that even then when you were a liberal pinko.
Yeah, and they weren't all black. You know, 95% of them in Oakland were, but there's white crackheads in Oakland.
Right.
I dated a few.
That's a perfect example of, I guess, how the market would sort that out if you are into that kind of thing. You don't want crackheads to have babies. Well, in a free market, crackheads wouldn't get free government money, but they might get money from people who are paying them not to reproduce.
Absolutely. So, you know, we could do about 4 episodes on this. It's amazing. I'm going to link the Wikipedia article, Eugenics in the United States, and then the other article, Unethical Human Experimentation in the United States, which... Eugenics and unethical human experimentation were both things that were championed and spread on a large level by, like, rich people and politicians and the powerful in the United States. And then the Nazis went, that's a good idea, and started doing it. And then after the war, a lot of the Nazi scientists got hired by the United States for the war, you know, the ongoing expand the government war powers, science powers.
They didn't want the Soviets to get them, which...
Well, you know, an interesting thing I heard was that the reason Hitler never got the bomb, the nuclear bomb, and he was working really hard on it, was because he drove all of the good Jewish scientists to America.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but, you know, a lot of the Nazi scientists that did horrible medical experimentation on people came to America and worked for the CIA. And I'm talking things like taking a prisoner and pulling their teeth out with no anesthetic, or doing surgery where they reroute their bowels to not leave their body and see how long it takes them to die from just the shit building up.
Jesus.
I mean, it's insane. This article, Unethical Human Experimentation in the United States, you know, if you think the government is out for your best interests...
You're already too far gone.
There's like 200 examples on here, and it's the only ones that were known about. In 1880, in Hawaii, a California physician working for the hospital injected young girls under the age of 12 with syphilis. In 1909, F.C. Knowles released a study describing how he deliberately infected children in an orphanage with after an outbreak at the orphanage in order to study the disease.
Molluscum contagiosum. Yes.
The Stateville Penitentiary Malaria Study gave malaria to prisoners of a state penitentiary in Joliet, Illinois in 1940. The study was conducted with the United States Army and the State Department. At the Nuremberg trials in Germany, the Nazi doctors cited these experiments as part of their defense. From 1946 to 1948 in Guatemala, U.S. researchers used prostitutes to infect prison inmates and insane asylum inmates with sexually transmitted diseases.
Hold on, I like this one. Direct inoculations made from syphilis bacteria poured into the men's penises and on forearms and faces that were slightly abraded, or in a few cases, through spinal punctures. Syphilis into your spine.
Yes. Let's popcorn read this. In 1952, Sloan Kettering Institute researcher Charles M. Southam injected live cancer cells into prisoners at Ohio State Prison. Half the prisoners in the National Institute of Health-sponsored study were black.
In 1955, the CIA conducted a biological warfare experiment, despite the Fourth Geneva Convention, which obviously nobody cares about in this country at least, where they released whooping cough bacteria from boats outside of Tampa, Florida, causing a whooping cough epidemic in the city and killing at least 12 people. The CIA!
And some of these, you know, like, I'm not a truther or a birther or a chemtrails guy, but it's like, some of this sounds just like the chemtrail things people say they're doing now, spraying things onto cities in America and the world.
Right, right. Well, that's why when you hear those things, you're not supposed to go, oh, that's just insane. Because this kind of stuff's happened before. I mean, like I say with these kind of truther things and the chemtrail things, I already know the government's evil. I don't need those kind of things to remind me of it. I mean,
in 1956 and 1957, several U.S. Army biological warfare experiments were conducted on the cities of Savannah, Georgia, and Avon Park, Florida. In the experiments, Army biowarfare researchers released millions of infected mosquitoes on the two towns to see if the insects could spread yellow fever and Danang fever. Hundreds of residents contracted a wide array of illnesses. Army researchers pretended to be public health workers so they could photograph and perform medical tests. Several people died as a result of these experiments. This goes up to the 60s, you know. In 1966, the Army released back into the New York subway system as part of a study called A Study of Vulnerability of Subway Passengers in New York to Covert Attack with Biological Agents. Okay, let me read about MK Ultra while you do that.
Oh, that's a horrible thing. Okay, but yeah, please do.
This is in the 70s. MK Ultra was a CIA program that continued until 1973, where they would have prostitutes dose Johns with LSD and then see what they did to see if LSD could be used as a truth serum, or one soldier that was dosed with it jumped out a window and killed himself.
Wow.
There's a band called MK Ultra. I think that's a good name for a band.
Yeah, and there's also a Immortal Technique song where he uses that in the chorus.
There's a really good movie based on that with Tim Robbins. It's called Jacob's Ladder. You ever seen it?
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's devastating and weird. It's a really good psychodrama movie. I highly recommend it.
Here's a good evil radioactive one. In 1961 and 1962, 10 Utah State prison inmates had blood samples taken, which were then mixed with radioactive chemicals and re-injected back into their bodies.
This is so beyond the government thinking they own you. It's the final solution of the government thinking they own you. And it's like,
not only do they think they own us, but they don't even prize us as owned possessions. I mean, we're not the flat screen TV when they own us. We're the grain of rice.
An interesting thing I heard was in this book by Jim Goad called The Redneck Manifesto. You know, he doesn't deny that there was slavery of Africans in America, or blacks from not just Africa, but other places in America, and that it was a horrible thing. But he doesn't buy that they get a big pass on whining about it, because he said that whites were treated just as badly in America, or worse, whites who were indentured servants. And he said, you know, when I first heard about indentured servitude, when they taught about it in high school, it sounded great. It's like you'd come over and you'd intern for somebody and do some work for them. I always pictured myself working along Benjamin Franklin, helping him run his printing press and learning a trade. But it was more like they were treated horribly and often not let go when their 7-year contract was up, because the owners would find some kind of infraction to charge them with. And they were actually whipped harder often and worse than slaves. And the analogy he used was, you know, how do you treat a rental car versus a car you own?
Right. Yeah. You own the slaves. You want them to, indentured servants could get, I imagine them getting worked to death more than the slaves. You own the slaves. You don't want them to die. You got to buy a new slave. You got an indentured servant. You work them till they die, because after their contract is up, they're jetting. They're gone anyway.
There was also slavery in America, getting whites in America and shipping them over to the Orient. Oregon was a big place for that. Like Portland, Oregon. They would, in bars, they would dose people with a Mickey Finn, which was coral hydrate mixed in with a drink. It's like one drink and you're instantly unconscious. And then in some of the bars, I saw a documentary about this on History Channel. In some of the bars, they would have like a trap door behind where the bartender is, and they would just drag the guy back there and drop him down into the basement. And then they had people down there who would carry him through these tunnels down to the shore and put him on a ship. It's called getting Shanghai'd, because they'd sent a lot of them to Shanghai, China. You've heard the term getting Shanghai'd.
Like, that's where the term came from. Huh. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
People are horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think even now there's a case to be made where I might not be treated like that, but I'm still a slave. You're still a slave.
It's different, though. It's soft slavery, you know?
It's soft slavery, yeah. We're the free-range cattle, but they still think of us as the cattle.
Yeah, there's a good video by that guy in Canada we like. What's his name?
Stefan Molyneux?
Yeah, where he talks about the owners finally figured out that they could steal more if they gave their cattle some freedom.
Yeah, yeah. We're the organic beef of modern slaves. We're allowed to roam free. We're allowed to eat the healthy food that we want. We're given a modicum of freedom to where, but only because it makes us healthier. Only because it makes us produce more for them to take.
Yep.
And right now, I think they're scared. We're getting too strong, in a sense. We're starting to realize that we can be free. And I think that's why you see them clamping down now more than ever. Because I think those in charge feel like they're losing a bit of control right now.
As of 2007, not a single U.S. government researcher has been prosecuted for human experimentation. And many of the victims of U.S. government experiments have not received compensation or, in many cases, acknowledgement of what was done with them.
Wow.
You know, one of the really famous ones is the Tuskegee syphilis experiments. You know about those?
Yeah, but mostly from Dave Chappelle's character in, what was that movie? The movie about them smoking pot.
Half-Baked.
Half-Baked, that was it. Yeah. When he's the janitor and he tells the scientist, you know, my uncle was in the Tuskegee experiments.
It was long-running, too. It was Tuskegee, Alabama. I've actually played there with my band Bomb. Conducted between 1932 and 1972, where U.S. public health officials studied the natural progression of syphilis in untreated poor rural black men who thought they were receiving free health care from the U.S. government. Yes.
Yes, Obama's going to give us all syphilis.
Maybe.
Or worse. I mean, they had it easy. They got syphilis.
Syphilis is curable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think we've yakked enough about this.
Yeah, in fact, I think it's time for us to wrap it up with something more positive than the government giving people syphilis.
I have another movie review. It's not a feel-good hit of the year at all. It's a movie called The Dry Land. And it's an independent movie that's really well done. And it's about a soldier returning from Iraq and trying to live a normal life. And it's just fucking devastating. Actually, returning from Afghanistan. And I highly recommend it. The Dry Land.
The Dry Land.
I think it's on Netflix. I watched it on TV. Netflix price went up. Everyone's mad. I'm not.
Well, I also heard they were splitting their services. Now you have either streaming or DVD or both.
Yeah, I have both right now for $8.99 a month, and it's going up to $15.99 a month for both.
Well, hell, get rid of your cable. I mean, every time you talk about some media you've ingested, it's always through Netflix. You've stopped watching Fox News 24/7, if I'd venture to guess that.
Yeah, so the denouement. So this guy in New Hampshire set himself on fire and killed himself, poured gasoline on himself on the courthouse steps in about a month ago. We never got around to covering this, but it's important and we don't want to let it slip by without commenting on it. And he sent a 15-page essay to the local paper, and they actually printed it, which surprised me, especially since it ended with other people should do this and kill cops, which we do not agree with. But a lot of people said that his essay was rambling, but, you know, under his conditions, I would, you know, with what he was planning, I wouldn't expect it to be anything but. And there were parts of it that were very cogent and talking about how he'd been screwed over by the system and how there's two kinds of law in the country. There's the law as it is on the books and then the law as it's really practiced. And he was screwed out of his kid by a woman and they side with the mother and just fucked over and ruined by the courts.
Well, a woman that was being paid by the Department of Child Services or whatever they call it there in New Hampshire.
Being paid by them?
Yeah, she was an employee.
Oh.
Right?
I did not know that. I didn't catch that part.
Well, which woman are we talking about? Were you talking about his wife?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the state screwing him over. I guess he was screwed by a few people.
You know, all accounts and his say that the woman was, shall we say, not a calm person. But it just really, it was shocking to me, and it made me think about just immolation in general. And it's like, in the 60s, there were some monks who lit themselves on fire and killed themselves very publicly to protest the Vietnam War. It's one of my first memories, and there's a picture of that, a black and white picture of that, that's like the Time magazine top 10 photos of all time, and it really is so striking. Someone used it as an album cover,
yeah,
too, didn't they?
Rage Against the Machine. Yeah.
Socialists.
Socialists, but they jam sometimes.
They jam.
I can still dig it. And they're anti the machine. I mean, they hate the state as it stands. It's sad that they don't hate the state in general, but at least they hate the state as it stands.
It's sad that they're anti-business instead of anti-corporatist.
Right, which the thing is, a corporation as it stands now doesn't really exist without the government. So if you're hating corporations, hate the government that invented them and creates them and gives them their incorporation.
And they're hypocrites because they're on Warner Brothers Records. Or they were.
Right, right.
They were signed around the time my band Bomb was signed. Bomb actually played a gig opening up for them in a club that held about 100 people.
Ah, okay. I dig it.
I didn't like them. I couldn't even really understand their lyrics, and I just thought they were, at that point, they just sounded like a bad Chili Peppers ripoff band to me.
I could see that in their early days. Okay, okay.
But anyway, back to self-immolation. Man, it's shocking.
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it, kids.
We had much more cogent stuff to say about this, but I think we got to wrap it up.
I'll wrap it up.
Wrap it up. What you got?
Mouse gun power. You know, people have these like magic bullet arguments back and forth, screaming at each other on gun forums of why you should carry the 9mm or the 40 cal or the 357 or the blah, 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 blah. And it all basically boils down to shot placement is more important than power. You know,
definitely.
It's better to, if a guy's trying to kill you, it's better to shoot him in the eye with a 22 than miss with a 45.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's my lesson of the day. World War I was started in Europe with a single shot from a 380 ACP. World War II was finally ended in Europe with a single shot from a 32. It was, because World War I was started by the assassination of Archduke Francis Ferdinand, and that was with a 380, which is a tiny, tiny, tiny bullet. And World War II was ended in Europe with Hitler killing himself with a 32, which is a tiny bullet.
Right. Tinier than the 38. Is 38 really all that small? I mean, as far as smaller than the 9?
No, but 380 is smaller than 38. 38, okay, now we're getting into this argument, but a 38 is the smallest caliber I'll carry.
Okay. You mean 38 special?
Yeah, 38 special.
In a snub-nosed revolver, I'm presuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 380 is less than that. I used to have a 380. I had a Ruger LCP, which is a little 12-ounce plastic mouse gun. It's, you know, it's fucking tiny. It fits in your pocket.
You know, there's a rapper on the West Coast named Spice One from back in the day, and he's got a song where he sort of plays this debate out between 9mm and 380. And he's like, I used to fuck with that 9, but now it's that 380.
And you've said that mouse gun calibers are often a topic in hip-hop, but I think it's because they're all living in places where it's illegal to own a gun, so you can't have anything that's going to print through your pocket.
That's true. Only the really rich rappers talk about their 40s.
Yeah, my gold-plated Desert Eagle 357 SIG.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was reading this article on Police One the other day, which is a site by cops for cops, which is really amazing site to look at if you want to know what cops are thinking and how they fuck you over and what they think when they shoot somebody and think it's cool. But there's a thing on there on how to spot if someone's concealed carrying illegally.
Ah, so what cops look for.
Yeah, and one of the things, I've never heard of this, I want to know if you've heard of this. It said, in the hip-hop community, it's not uncommon for someone to carry their gun in their hoodie on their back, in their hood.
Huh. No, I didn't know about that. That's a good call, though. The only thing I worry about is
It going off?
I worry more about it falling out. You know,
yeah.
If I'm running around or I'm bent over, you know, doing something, yep, tying my shoe, I worry about it falling out. I like the gun to be holstered. I really do. I tried Mexican carrying, you know, in the waistband in the front for a while, but in the end, I just rather it be in a holster.
Well, that's another thing he says is, you know, and he's talking about the difference between non-criminal citizens who carry and criminals who carry, and, you know, he said, like, citizens almost always have a holster, and criminals almost always just have the gun in their pocket.
Hmm. Okay. Okay.
And he said, like, honest citizens generally don't dress like hip-hoppers, and I was like, you don't know my friend Nima.
I don't really dress like a, I guess what you'd call a hip-hopper, mostly because I'm...
You would to this cop, though. He's like, dirtbags don't wear jeans, and...
right. I got to be wearing my Sunday best when I carry, I suppose.
Yes, yes.
Here's the question. Then they said, how to spot somebody who's concealed carrying illegally? It seems like that'd be impossible because how do they know if you got that permit in your wallet or not?
It wasn't that. It was an article on how to spot if someone's carrying.
Ah.
But then within the article, he talked about the differences
between citizens carrying and quote-unquote criminals
dirt carrying. Dirtbags, yeah. Hey, did you check out that hip hop from Ghana, Africa?
Yeah, I did actually.
There's some cool stuff. I'll link that.
Yeah, I dug it.
Ghana kind of reminds me of Jamaica in how visually colorful the place is. Like everything's painted really bright primary colors. And the clothes are, a lot of them are primary colors. And
right. And they are on the coast, right? They're in coastal Africa on the
west. Yeah, they're on the Gold Coast.
The Gold Coast.
On the west coast of Africa. Right. Yeah, it's funny. There's actually like another thing they have in common with Jamaicans is they tend to kind of operate on their own time. Like there's a term in Ghana, Ghanaian man time, instead of, you know, GMT, whatever, mean time, Greenwich, which is what the time they're on. Uh-huh. But it's like a self-deprecating insult of like, you know, they're often late to things, take things on their own time. When I was in Jamaica, I was in Manchester, England, working with this art youth organization, showing my film and teaching filmmaking for a couple weeks, a bunch of years ago. It was run by Jamaicans, and they had a term, Jamaican time. Those guys were like 4 hours late for everything. But the Ghanaian I'm dealing with is not late for anything, and he's always right there, and he's very proactive. Yeah. But he thought it was funny when I mentioned Ghana man time instead of Greenwich mean time.
Word. Well, Word. Speaking of being late, I think we're late to wrap it up, B.
All right, we'll just end on that racial insult.
Racial insult. Give us some words of happiness, Michael.
It's said with love for my uncle in Ghana.
Yeah,
Kofi.
For our uncle in Ghana. That's mm-hmm. that's our good note. Our good note is, even in Ghana, Africa, the Liberty Movement is alive and well.
And you can help. So go to our website for this podcast, and for only pennies a day, you could help spread liberty in Africa. And also go vote to have Nima be a guest on Adam and the Man. I'll put Cheers. A link for that.
I'll drink to that.
Word.
Word.
Word. Out.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.